Well, it seems some of you enjoyed my first hysterical reading and asked me to continue from where I'd left off, which was admittedly more difficult than I thought it would be because I was somewhat distracted when I finished last time. But I've managed to find the place I was at, and now I'm sat here with it open in front of me, and my cock hard in my hand. It's time to continue. So let's get going. Young Stamford looked rather strangely at me over his wine glass. "You don't know Sherlock Holmes yet?" he said. "Perhaps you would not care for him as a constant companion." "Why? What is there against him?" "Oh, I didn't say there was anything against him. He's a little queer in his ideas. An enthusiast in some branches of science. As far as I know, he is a decent fellow enough." "A medical student, I suppose," I said. "No, I have no idea what he intends to go in for. I believe he is well up in anatomy, and he's a first-class chemist, but as far as I know, he has never taken out any systematic medical classics. His studies are very delusory and eccentric, but he has amassed a lot of out-of-the-way knowledge which would astonish his professors." "Did you never ask him what he was going for?" I asked. "No. He's not a man that it is easy to draw out, though he can be communicative enough when the fancy seizes him." "I should like to meet him," I said. "If I am to lodge with anyone, I should prefer a man of studious and quiet habits. I'm not strong enough yet to stand much more noise or excitement. I had enough of both in Afghanistan to last me for the remainder of my natural existence. How could I meet this friend of yours?" "He is sure to be at the laboratory," returned my companion. "He either avoids the place for weeks or else he works there from morning to night. If you like, we shall drive round together after luncheon." "Certainly," I answered, and the conversation drifted away into other channels. As we made our way to the hospital after leaving the Holborn, Stamford gave me a few more particulars about the gentleman whom I proposed to take as a fellow lodger. "You mustn't blame me if you don't get on with him," he said. "I know nothing more of him than I have learned from meeting him occasionally in the laboratory. You proposed this arrangement, so you must not hold me responsible. If we don't get on, it will be easy to part company," I answered. "It seems to me, Stamford," I added, looking hard at my companion, "that you have some reason for washing your hands of the matter. Is this fellow's temper so formidable? Or what is it? Don't be mealy-mouthed about it." "It is not easy to express the inexpressible," he answered with a laugh. "Holmes is a little too scientific for my tastes. It approaches to cold-bloodedness. I could imagine his giving a friend a little pinch of the latest vegetable alkaloid, not out of malevolence, you understand, but simply out of a spirit of inquiry in order to have an accurate idea of the effects. To do him justice, I think he would have to take it himself with the same readiness. He appears to have a passion for definitive and exact knowledge. Very right, too. Yes, but it may be pushed to excess. When it comes to beating the subjects, in the dissecting rooms with a stick. It is certainly taking rather a bizarre shape. Beating the subjects? Yes, to verify how far bruises may be produced after death. I saw him at it with my own eyes. And yet you say he is not a medical student? No. Heaven knows what the objects of his studies are. But here we are, and you must form your own impressions about him. As he spoke, we turned down a narrow lane and passed through a small side door, which opened into a wing of the great hospital. It was familiar ground to me, and I needed no guidance as we ascended the bleak stone staircase and made our way down the long corridor, with its vista of whitewashed wall and dun-coloured doors. Near the farther end, a low arch passage branched away from it and led to the chemical laboratory. This was a lofty chamber, lined and littered with countless bottles. Broad, low tables were scattered about, which bristled with retorts, test tubes, and little Bunsen lamps, with their blue flickering flames. There was only one student in the room, who was bending over a distant table absorbed in his work. At the sound of our steps, he glanced round and sprang to his feet with a cry of pleasure. "I've found it! I've found it!" he shouted to my companion, running towards us with a test tube in hand. "I found a reagent which is precipitated by hemoglobin, and by nothing else." He had discovered a gold mine. Greater delight could not have shone upon his features. "Dr. Watson, Mr. Sherlock Holmes," said Stamford, introducing us. "How are you?" he said cordially, gripping my hand with the strength for which I should hardly have given him credit. "You have been in Afghanistan, I perceive." "How on earth did you know that?" I asked in astonishment. "Never mind," he said, chuckling to himself. "The question now is about hemoglobin. No doubt you see the significance of this discovery of mine." "It is interesting chemically, no doubt," I answered. "But practically..." "Why, man, it is the most practical medico-legal discovery for years. Don't you see that it gives us an infallible test for bloodstains? Come over here now." He seized me by the coat sleeve in his eagerness and drew me over to the table which he had been working. "Let us have some fresh blood," he said, digging a leaden bodkin into his finger and drawing off the resulting drop of blood into a chemical pipette. "Now, I add this small quantity of blood to a litre of water. You perceive that the resulting mixture has the appearance of pure water. The proportion of blood cannot be more than 1 in 1,000,000. I have no doubt, however, that we shall be able to obtain the characteristic reaction." As he spoke, he threw into the vessel a few white crystals, and then added some drops of a transparent fluid. In an instant, the contents assumed a dull mahogany colour, and a brownish dust was precipitated to the bottom of the glass jar. "Ha-ha!" he cried, clapping his hands, and looking delighted as a child with a new toy. "What do you think of that?" "It seems to be a very delicate test," I remarked. "Beautiful, beautiful. The old Guaiacum test was very clumsy and uncertain. So is the microscopic examination for blood corpuscles. The latter is valueless if the stains are a few hours old. Now this appears to act as well, whether the blood is old or new. Yes. Had this test been invented, there are hundreds of men now walking the earth who would have long ago have paid the penalty for their crimes. Indeed, I murmured. Criminal cases are continually hinging upon that one point. A man suspected of a crime months, perhaps, after it has been committed. His linen or clothes are examined, and brownish stains discovered upon them. Oh, yes. Oh, fuck, yes. Are they blood stains, or mud stains, or rust stains, or fruit stains? And why are they? That is a question which has puzzled many an expert. And why? Because there was no reliable test. Now we have the Sherlock Holmes test. And there will no longer be any difficulty. Yes. Yes. His eyes fairly glistened as he spoke. And he put his hand over his heart and bowed as if to some applauding crowd conjured up by his imagination. Fuck. Fuck, yes. You are to be congratulated, I remarked, considerably surprised at his enthusiasm. Fuck. Fuck, yeah. Yes. Fuck, yeah. I think I managed to get a bit further than last time, but maybe not. Let me know if you want me to continue with this, and I hope you hear from me soon.